You're listening to In the Bunker, a podcast that explores the biggest challenges in starting and running a business. My name's Joshua Maddox, and I'm an entrepreneur and business owner myself. I'm sitting down with business owners to talk about the challenges they face, the lessons they've learned, and how we can all grow from it. Welcome back to In the Bunker. Every business owner has faced challenges, and we love to share those stories. Today, we have Matthew Lopez in the bunker with us. Matthew helps early stage startups avoid legal issues by providing them general counsel, but he does it fractionally, and he's going to explain a little bit of that in a minute. There's so much to learn from this conversation. I'm super excited to jump in. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Looking forward to having this conversation.
Awesome. Let's get to know you a little bit. Let's get that 90-second background. Who are you? How'd you get here? What do you do? Technical issues. I love it.
Sorry about that. So every time someone calls me, it cuts off my headset. Yep. And yeah, it's the most annoying thing.
I love it.
My name is Matthew Lopez. I'm a fractional general counsel. And what that kind of looks like is I work with lots of different startups as their general counsel, and I work part-time for them. But it's being able to be this in-house role with being this outside position. And so what I do is I have a law firm, and we have different attorneys at different levels, paralegals. And so what we do is we create a fractional legal department for businesses at all different sizes. So depending if you're a startup to a mid-sized company or whatever, we plug in the resources that you need, and then you get to use it as much or as little as you really need. And so as the general counsel, I go in there, I organize it all, and I make sure that you have one point of contact to be able to utilize all these services. And then for other companies that may already have a general counsel, we actually just plug in the legal department, and then they have the ability to use as much or as little as they want without having a GC in place with them.
Got it. So the nice part about the fractional aspect, and for those who are listening, like, this isn't just for an attorney who is general counsel with inside the business. This is also for maybe it's a CMO or a CFO or all those different types of roles where you want to flush out a more leadership docket, but you don't necessarily have the financial ability to go out and just hire 8 different C-level executives at their full salary. This allows you to not only hire someone at a considerably less rate than a full salary for a general counsel, but it also gives the aspect of they're not just hiring you part-time. They're hiring you and your full team part-time, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, because a lot of the times most businesses don't need a full-time GC. They don't have enough work to demand that, because the reality is a GC is a very high-level person. They should only be reviewing a certain amount of stuff. It's more about strategy, whereas paralegals, senior attorneys, and associates can handle a lot of the grunt work at a lower price point for the business. But hiring all of these different people to create a law firm or to create a legal department in a business just doesn't work. And it's the same thing for CFOs and CMOs. A lot of the people that I work with have these exact same kind of structures where you can plug and play a whole department and you only utilize what you want per month. And so it's a much better model to be able to get that high level experience that you just wouldn't be able to afford if you went out onto the market.
Yeah, which is really cool. And then allows the business to grow over time. And like you said, maybe down the road, as that company does grow, they do hire maybe a general counsel or someone internal, which is fine. And then after that company has hired the general counsel, then you guys are still there to support, to be back office, to do some more of that stuff as that company continues to grow, to flush out potentially having a full legal department if they're able, you know, to pay for that as needed.
Yeah. And a lot of the times we encourage, like a lot of the times these companies want to hire the actual one of the people that's working on their case, like on their business. So they usually will find that they'll take the senior associate and that's their first legal hire. So because they know the business, they know everything about it, and they're comfortable with that person, or they're like, and so it's a really nice transition for them. And we encourage it. It's one of those things where we help find talent for our client, and we're constantly hiring people to replace those people, train them, and get them into the position, because it's about, we're encouraging our people to grow internally and then go find the right opportunity for them.
That's really interesting. Super backwards from a typical contractor agreement. Normally there's a, you can't hire anybody on our team for 12 months after our agreement ends or something like that, where you guys are literally doing the opposite, where you're like, hey, as you guys grow, we encourage you to take the employee that's on our team and hire them internal as you guys grow. I mean, obviously there's some placement fees and stuff associated, but
yeah, no. Exactly. And that's one of those things, is like, it's one of those things like, we helped find these people for you. We helped develop them. So there's a cost for extracting them from our team. But it also, then that cost goes into us being able to replace that person and being able to train the next generation of attorney for it. Because it's one of those things, a lot of our companies really like that we're very business minded. We are not a, we're not like a lot of lawyers that are in-house get a bad reputation of being the no. And we very much don't say no. We say, here's your, what is it that you're actually trying to solve for? Okay. The way that you're going about that isn't the appropriate way, most likely. Here's a couple other options, and here's the pros and cons of each one of these. You get to pick what you want, which one you want. And if you want to sink your company, by all means, go for it. It's not my problem. But it's one of those things where we have a very different approach to being your partner and being a business, like being a part of your business, rather than being this outside service that you're utilizing. We want to go in-house as much as we can without you having to pay the cost of employees. And that's why a lot of companies really like our model, and we are swamped with new clients every month.
Not a bad problem to have. I will say, like, so many times, like, we deal with attorneys, like clients' attorneys, as we're, you know, sending a contract to sign, and the client's attorney wants us to put a stipulation that as a digital agency, the website's going to be online 24/7, 365, 100% guaranteed uptime. And I was like, have you ever used the internet before? Yeah. And just that aspect, I feel like sometimes there's attorneys that are out there that they have so much of a CYA policy that there's no way you could get business done. And there's no way productive, where what you guys are explaining is the aspect of, you still got to get business done, but what's the, how can we make sure we're not going to get in trouble and still be profitable?
Exactly. Like, that's, at the end of the day, it's okay, this deal's going to get done one way or the other. How can I best protect my client? How can I make the pie bigger for everyone? Because a lot of the times, most attorneys, they'll send red lines back and forth and nothing gets done. It takes weeks to get contracts done. My policy is that I send out a contract for one of my clients, or I receive a contract, I redline, and I'm like, hey, let's jump on a phone call to discuss. Because now we have an understanding of what we need to discuss and how we can resolve. Let's get on the phone so we can resolve these issues and find some way for our two companies to do business, because they want to do business. My job is not to stop them from doing business. It's to help them.
Yeah.
And it's, a lot of attorneys don't see it that way. And
frustrating.
Very, it is. And that, especially when I come into a new business, like right now, I'm actually having this problem with one of my clients. I redline these agreements and I don't get, they're not including me on the emails before I get the red line. So I have no context. Then they take my red line and they send it out without including me on it. So I have no ability, like I'm just sitting there in the ether. And eventually I was like, no, this is not going to happen. And after it happened like twice, I was like, I am not going to gum up your thing. I actually make these problems go away much quicker if there is issues, because I know how to handle this properly. And so right now we're having that meeting and like over email, he's like, yeah, you're right. We need to do this. Let's get on a phone call and discuss how we want to implement this. But there's a lot of hesitancy to include attorneys in negotiations a lot of the time because we muck shit up. And it's no, you shouldn't be mucking it up. You should be helping clarify and be able to protect the client. And sometimes it's about having mutuality of clauses and having really fair agreements that go both ways.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
and that's where I feel like so many businesses or just business owners in general, anytime that they don't understand something, it's, I don't understand it. I don't want to deal with it. And it's that aspect of just not wanting to touch it because it's something that's not understood. And that's where I think oftentimes, sadly, there's a lot of attorneys that don't make it easier to understand. And I've seen websites where their terms and conditions is 12 pages long and you can't understand it. Then I've seen other websites where it's a two column and the left column is all the legal speak. The right column is the English interpretation of or whatever. Yeah. And it's all okay. At least we're trying to make this, you know, accessible to the general public. And that's good. It's just, it's crazy. As you're working with these businesses and chatting through just these issues and helping them in that early stage of startup, what are some of those challenges that you help them overcome? So the issues that they are facing?
Yeah, there's a lot of different issues that startups deal with. I think one of the biggest things is how do you set up the corporation, like the business? And what are the implications of kind of an LLC versus a corporation? And that's a big decision that a lot of business owners need to understand. And it's not just a legal decision, it's also a tax decision. And if you don't if you don't have the right people talking, you can get mixed messages from people. And then it's hard, like a business owner doesn't know how to interpret both sides because both sides are speaking different languages and don't know how to understand each other. And so the real key is having someone that you can advise you on that understands the whole gambit of stuff, not just legal, not just tax and business. And you need to have that congruency because it's everything together. And so a lot of the times that's one of the big things that I help with is because I have a master's in accounting, I ran a startup and I raised money on that startup. Like it's a very different beast to be able to then advise someone on all of these and be able to listen to all the professionals. So that's one of the major areas. And then the other one is for founders is if there's more than one, guess what? Something's going to go wrong between your relationship at some point. And, or someone's going to want an exit or who knows what it is. So you need to be able, you need to prepare for those things because I had one startup where the founders had known each other for years. They're best friends. One guy had a mental breakdown during the startup because he was working too much and was sidelined for 2 or 3 months. And because of the way they set it up before I got in, they couldn't do anything. The other founder literally couldn't sign anything because it required both of their decisions because they were both 50-50 partners.
Oh, geez.
So for 3 months, we were trying to figure out how to deal with this situation. And then after he got out of it, the guy was still a little loopy. And so we had to exit him from the startup and separate the company. And so if they had done good agreements at the beginning, this would have solved this problem. And it's one of those things where you don't ever think if that's going to happen. Oh, that's not going to be me and my co-founder have known each other for 10 years. We've been childhood friends. When there's money involved and there's decisions and there's emotions, all of these things come into play, stuff goes wrong. And you have to be able to have that understanding of who makes the decisions, who's the tiebreaker in a decision, or who is going to, if it's a financial decision, who makes it? If it's a legal decision, who makes the tie? Like you can break it all up. There's lots of cool ways that you can do it. Or maybe it's just flip a coin. And I've seen that done before and it's random. I'm like, okay, that's what you want. Cool. But you never know how you want it. You need to put some process in place for it.
Yeah. And that's the key to anything, really, any business decision. If there's a process or some sort of an analysis that's been done, if everybody agrees on the process and whatever the outcome is ends up resulting in the company filing for bankruptcy or closing or whatever the process, like if the process was agreed upon and everybody in the decision-making aspect is like, yeah, we followed the process and that's what we all said to do. And everything went belly up. So there's less of a, for lack of a better explanation, but hurt feelings and emotions. And there's a little bit less of that. I've been a part of a startup weekend and man, in 3 days, it's insane the amount of ideas that can come out and stuff that happens. And these are just conceptual elements that don't typically end up going anywhere. Now, granted, there are companies and products and apps and websites that have all come out of startup weekends that are incredible. And, but 90% of the ideas that go into a startup weekend never go anywhere. But still, even concept ideas and seeing how hurt people get over, oh, this person changed my idea to do this instead. And it is crazy.
Yeah. Most people want to think that they're extremely logical when the reality is we're extremely emotional creatures. And it's one of those things where you have to take that in consideration when you're doing all of these things. Yeah. And having the emotional intelligence to be able to put the process in. One of my favorite books is The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And it lays out how you get buy-in from people and a team. And that's really what it comes down to when you're making these decisions is you just need to be able to allow people to express their minds and then make the decision. Make sure that they're heard.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that's what's hard in a situation like you were mentioning earlier, where the co-founder was on the sideline for a few months. It's hard because even if decisions were made during that time, unless there's a process or an element in place that says what to do in that situation, when that person does come back, it's hard because what decisions may have been made may not have been those, the ones they wanted, or there's all those aspects. But at the same point, if you're starting a company that has employees and has investors and has all that type of stuff, like you can't just park on the side of the road for 3 months. Like you got to keep moving or you're going to burn through your cash. Yeah. You're going to end up having to shut it all down. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Cool.
What? Yeah, no. And it's one of those things where, go ahead.
No, go for it.
No, I was just going to lead into maybe another topic. So go for it.
I was going to transition as well.
I think one of the more important things that a lot of founders are always asking questions from me is about fundraising. And it's one of those, it's an extremely complicated area. There's so many laws about it. And there's certain ways that you do things. And there's founder-friendly ways and there's investor-friendly ways to do stuff. And I've seen like companies get forced into different buckets based on it. And it's one of those things where if you don't have a clear plan of how to raise money or know that process, your first time, you're going to mess it up. Because it's not just business, it's legal, it's accounting, it's everything that goes into that process.
So you mean to tell me there's laws about like people giving companies $10 million and there's things you should do? Imagine that.
I know, like the SEC and the IRS might want to know about you doing all of handling all of this money.
Yeah.
Like, just maybe.
And if there's if the business makes money, they're probably going to want that reported, I guess, as well nowadays.
It's a crazy world. The government's asking for all these things. I don't know.
Yeah. No, and I will say I've been in business about 15 years now and looking at some of the paperwork that has to be done now versus even 10 years ago, it's insane. Just the amount of more and more paperwork and more filings and more stuff and more annual reports that have to be submitted. And it's crazy. And I can't even imagine when you get into the realm of a startup that's doing a campaign for $5 million, $10 million, $50 million. There's definitely some legal aspects, some federal compliance, and then the whole aspect of, okay, cool. What happens if everything falls apart and the money goes away like, who's liable? Who's responsible for that? Is it back on the co-founder? Now the co-founder owes, or, you know, the founders owe that investor $10 million. That's going to be a lifetime to repay.
Yeah. And generally no investor thankfully is looking for that, because they know that these guys are broke. That's why they're looking for money. So it's thankfully we very rarely have that as an issue come up, but it's more of putting together all the pieces to be able to find the right investors to get in front of them. Because I was talking to a lot of my investor friends, and one of the firms that I work with, they did an analysis on who they've actually fund. And the stat was about 85 to 90% of their deployed assets went to warm introductions. So if you had just sent a cold pitch deck into their venture fund, guess what? You have a 10 to 15% chance of getting funded. Whereas if someone that can make just be like a nice little intro and be like, hey, I know, like, this is a really cool company. Astronomically better odds.
Wow. Yeah. And I know.
So
the startup weekend that I was a part of, we had a concept for an app that would allow you to basically invite 5 or 6 people to an event. It would connect everybody's calendars through iCal or Google or whatever, and then find available times. Then there's systems out there now that do this. We had this concept and idea 10 years ago, never did anything with it, never went anywhere. Yeah. At the time, trying to get like iPhone calendar and Android calendar to work together was a nightmare.
That was a mess.
Yeah. And so we actually sat down with a venture capital firm, and one of their biggest things was the developer who was playing with some concepts with it. He's like, we don't know if we're going to go with this platform or that platform. The venture capital's, you know, company, the guys were like, we don't care. They're like, give us a proof of concept, because we don't care what it's built on. If we invest $100 million into this thing, you guys can rebuild it 6 months from now. We just want to see it work. We want to see things. We want to see the potential it has. And so that's where you get people who walk into like shows like Shark Tank, and they're like, I've got this $1 million idea. Okay, cool. What's the product? You don't have a prototype. Yeah. You don't have anything. Great. You're not getting a dime.
I was about to say, I talk to people all the time that have $1 million, $1 billion ideas, and fantastic. My big thing is, do you have the team that can execute this? And most of the time it's no, it's just me. I have this idea. I'm trying to find people. I'm like, oh, come back to me when I have that team, because otherwise you have an idea. It's worth 5 cents. That's what anyone's going to pay you for it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We get projects every now and then where companies
invest and execute them.
Yeah. Yeah. We get projects every now and then where companies are super concerned that we're going to steal their idea and run with it. And I was like, yeah, it's going to cost $100,000 to build that. I'm not going to take my team off of paid work for the next 6 to 12 months to focus on building this project. And then I'm going to have to dump another $100,000 into marketing or more.
Yeah.
To maybe make my money back 3 to 5 years down the road. I'm like, no, thank you. I don't want that.
I was about to say, I advise my startups, like, you can talk about the generics of your idea with pretty much everyone except someone that is a competitor. Don't go tell your competitors what you're doing, but pretty much everyone else is not going to steal your idea. They have more important things to do, nor do they have the expertise to execute on it. So who cares?
Yeah.
Like, the basic idea of your thing is not confidential. It's not like I had these stealth companies always get me. I'm like, okay, unless you're like, there are certain circumstances where it makes sense, but most of it, nope, no one's going to steal that. No one's going to do anything about that. And no one's going to even know about it. One of the lawyers that I work with on a regular basis, he works with a satellite company. And I got approached by this satellite manufacturer. They manufacture this piece, and they're a startup, and they've done prototypes and all this stuff. And I thought it would be a great connection because I thought the satellite company might want to invest in it. They'd never even heard of this company. And they're like, this is perfect. Like, we want to invest and all of this stuff. And it's like, most companies that are even in your space have never even heard of some of these startups because it's just, they're too busy doing their own thing.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And that's just, it's crazy when you look at all the startups, and oftentimes there isn't necessarily a unique idea, maybe a unique execution of the idea.
Yeah.
Or a unique marketing element. We look at things like Uber and Lyft and all the, you know, competition in that market. And you look at food delivery apps and you look at the end of the day, it's, they're all similar. It's an all very similar setup.
Yeah.
It's just different execution and who marketed it better. And there's some different pricing, elements to
marketing, like,
yep. Customer service. That's a huge element. You got crappy customer service. You're not lasting long.
Huge. Yeah.
Awesome. As we wrap up, what is your sort of biggest advice, your big piece that you would give as a takeaway for someone who is maybe in the startup stage or a small business who is facing the challenge of what do I do from a legal perspective, whether that is they're looking to file for an LLC or they're looking to figure out legal setup or they just have no clue what the heck they should do?
It's time to reach out to an attorney. And a lot of attorneys will give you at least a little bit of face time and kind of point you in the right direction. At least for me, there's a lot of startups that approach me and they ask me for help and they want me to come on board. And it's, no, you guys are too early. I will point you in the right direction and kind of talk you through some of this stuff and maybe do a monthly meeting with you. And that's kind of, you want to start finding advisors. And that applies to all of the areas. Your Rolodex is your most important asset that you own as a business entrepreneur. And so being able to just go talk to people, don't be afraid to start a conversation or ask people for help. Experts love giving help. That's why they do what they do. And so just ask for help is the best thing you can do, I think, if you're in that spot.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, it's so, you know, one of the things I would say not to do that I did when I started my business was I used what the attorney who I hired to fix it all, he called it legal doom, legalzoom.com.
Yeah.
And yeah,
do not use that.
Yeah. It cost me more money to fix all of my filing than it would have to do it the first time.
Yeah.
And I know a business owner.
You're completely correct.
I know a business owner who did something, an online service similar, and they messed up the filing and they went back to them and said, hey, can you fix this? And the company was gone. Like, and so it was just like fly by night disappeared. Finding the right attorney who's going to do the due diligence, do some research if you're filing an LLC to make sure that there is no, the business I just mentioned, there was actually another company under a similar name and the company sent them a cease and desist. They need to change their name because they're operating in the same space and all that mess. And find an attorney who's going to be there for the long haul of the business, not just someone who's going to give you advice once and leave. As you were saying, find an advisor who maybe you can have a monthly or quarterly or annual meeting with. Even an hour of an attorney's time once a year, once a quarter is so beneficial just to get the basic aspects in. Super good. And avoid LegalZoom.
And I don't want to bash. Don't use LegalZoom, but there are other good legal sites out there.
Yeah, there are for sure.
Like right now, a lot of the times when I have companies that want to do LLC filings or C corporation filing, I don't want to do it. It's going to cost them too much money for me to touch it. There are really good websites out there that do it, but you have to know which ones to go to. Like LegalZoom is not one of them. They're not built for doing that. It's, you have to know exactly what you're doing in order to use it. And it's not a friendly service.
The challenge that I had with LegalZoom specifically was the fact that you get this page and it says, do you want option A or option B? I don't know what the heck the difference is. And they give you a one sentence description and you're like, B, yeah. I guess?
No.
Sure. And what you really need is you need to hop on a call with someone, even if it's for 15 minutes to 30 minutes, and explain your business, what the legal entity that you want to set up. Are you planning on having 1,000 employees or one? Walk through some of those things and what the next 5 years of the business looks like, because what you don't want to do is file as an LLC and then 12 months later, change it to an S corp. And then 12 months later, change it to, that just gets to be a mess.
Yeah. But there are reasons. Like, I have advised startups to do LLCs to turn into S corporations, but you have to understand why you're doing it. And that's really where it comes down to. You're completely right. Is go talk to an attorney for just at least 30 minutes, let him understand your business and then advise you on how to do it. Then you can go do it yourself with different resources, because there's great resources out there. You don't need to have the attorney actually do all of the filing unless it's a complicated business structure. But when it just comes to this basic stuff, like, there's great stuff, but you need to know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah. Awesome. For those who may want to reach out to you, I do have your LinkedIn. I'll include that in the show notes below. That's probably, is there another great spot to connect with you, or that's it?
That's a great spot. Like, we're referral only. We don't do any marketing. We're a boutique law firm that handles this space.
Awesome. So if you're an early stage startup looking for a general counsel or a fractional general counsel, reach out. And sounds like you guys, I know at the beginning of the show or pre-show, I think it was, we were actually chatting. You guys were pretty busy right now, which is good. It's good to hear.
Yeah. We're swamped. We're taking on a new client pretty much every week. We're hiring extensively. And if anyone's an attorney that's watching this, feel free to reach out. If you're a corporate attorney, we're hiring. But yeah, we work with all different sizes of businesses. So just not startups, but anyone that's mid-sized, we help and work with. So it's a really cool space.
Awesome. Perfect. I appreciate having you on the show. And for those who want to reach out, like I said, LinkedIn URL will be in the show notes.
Awesome. Thanks for being on. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of In the Bunker. As always, we can be found on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at In the Bunker Podcast. Be sure to share this episode and what you're going to apply from it and how that can affect your business. Make sure to tag us in that post so we can highlight your journey as well. But before you go, I have a quick personal ask. Each episode of In the Bunker takes a lot of work to put together, from finding the guest, shooting, editing, all of that. And where I really could use your help is twofold. First, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or another podcast platform that can let you leave a 5-star review or a text-based review, I would truly and greatly appreciate that. It really helps with the algorithm and allowing other listeners to find the show. The next thing that I really need help on is sharing this with friends, family, business owners, people that you think need to hear this content. I appreciate you listening to this episode and looking forward to next week. Take care.